and welcome to this week's TES podcast, where we discuss the latest breaking news in education. I'm Dave Speck, and joining me is Catherine Luff. Hi, Catherine.
Hello. Hi.
We've got Mary Louise Clues. Mary Louise, hello.
Hi.
We've got Amy Gibbons. Amy, hello.
Hello.
And John Roberts. John, hi.
Hello there.
Now, I think we got away without mentioning it last week, but not for long, because Ofsted is high on the news agenda again, John, isn't it? And I believe you've done an investigation this week into subjects most popular for deep dives, is that right?
We had a piece on this, yeah. It kind of made a nice change to be not writing about COVID. So deep dives were, if we cast our mind back to before March, and when Ofsted launched its new framework as of September last year, they made curriculum the big focus. And the way they assess how well a school does its curriculum is by these so-called deep dives into particular subjects. Now, a former Ofsted inspector has done the FOI. I can't take the credit for the investigation.
Okay, yeah.
Findings. And he basically FOI'd them and said, what subjects have you done your deep dives into over all your inspections, and got data for more than 2,000 inspections. And I think what's striking about it is that it shows a real sort of disparity between the subjects and how often they're focused on. And in a way, I think it kind of gives you a sense that it can be almost quite arbitrary, I think, what Ofsted finds about a school, because now it's basically saying curriculum is the main focus, and this is how we judge the quality of your education. But it boils down to what subjects do they choose to look at. So a couple of things that jumped out. At primary, for example, they looked at history twice as often as they did geography. The three R's are obviously kind of high up in both, you might expect. And Ofsted had said that they'd always do reading and most often do maths at primary level, and that's shown in the data. But the guy that did this research, a chap called Adrian Gray, said it shows that they're not really getting across the curriculum. And there's some areas, arts, music, where it's they're not prevalent. Arts, I think, is like less than a quarter of secondary, and music's less than 10% in secondary and primary. So it's really interesting, because I think the way we've thought about these Ofsted inspections is that they're really kind of in-depth look at subjects, but it shows it's not across the board. And one thing that strikes me looking at it is, and these subjects are kind of decided in partnership with the school, that's the other thing to say, like they have a pitch about what they think Ofsted might want to look at, and Ofsted decides. But you know, if you've got a subject where you've either got a teacher absence, or you know, if Ofsted drills down on a department or a subject where for whatever reason you're not as strong as you are in others, that probably can have a material impact in
yeah, absolutely. Department. Yeah.
And I think the other thing that struck me about it is Ofsted themselves have started hiring subject specialists to kind of bolster their subject strength. And I wonder just to what extent the kind of the imbalances we saw in the piece just kind of speak to the particular knowledge bases of their inspectors. So at primary, for example, it's really striking to me that history is twice as common as geography. And I just wonder whether that's to do with the inspector knowledge, or whether it's to do with schools feel more able to kind of to talk about that. But yeah, really interesting. A great idea for an FOI by
Let me just ask you, John, do we know for definite when full inspections are going to return? Has Ofsted given any indication yet about January?
So the last we heard was 2 weeks ago from Gavin Williamson at the Academy show, who's ultimately it's down to him. It's his call. He said that we need to start planning for a time when Ofsted can come back in 2021. The official line still is they're coming back in January, but that's under review. But the kind of the things that the language that Gavin Williamson and Amanda Spielman were using a fortnight ago, Williamson saying we need to plan for their return from 2021, and Amanda Spielman said it would be a gradual return, it wouldn't be an inspection frenzy, it makes us think that it's not going to be January bang, hit the ground running, because how could it be? But I think the big unknown is, are they going to resume their framework, this curriculum based inspection? Are they going to try and go back to full thing? But we're expecting something imminently. Schools have been waiting for something for weeks and weeks and weeks.
I mean, it's sort of interesting, because we've got this story running today about something that the Shadow Education Secretary Kate Green said to us, that, you know, this current model of inspections where you've got this collaborative and supportive approach from Ofsted, she believes that that could be a model for the future from now on, because, you know, her argument basically is that the problems, the well-being problems for teachers and the learning loss for pupils isn't going to go away overnight as soon as you've got a vaccine. If you were to return to these full inspections in January, it's going to create a lot of problems. It's going to drive more teachers out of the profession. And you sort of just need this collaborative and supportive approach to continue. And it's a chance to have a look at the, you know, this fear and this sort of fearful aspect, and a model for the future, she says, which you know, I found quite interesting. I'm sure a lot of teachers would agree with that view. Look, can we move on? Another favourite topic of this podcast is Ofqual. And Catherine, as we understand it, there is only one day left for Ofqual to publish its final contingency plans into what will happen for with next year's GCSEs and A-levels. Is that right? I think they said they were going to do it by the end of November, didn't they?
Yes, they did. So that really doesn't leave very much time at all. Whether they stick to that deadline or not, I'm not entirely sure. But that was originally the plan, that they would publish exactly what's going to happen for next summer's exam series, what kind of plans are going to be put in place to, I suppose, mitigate the effects of the pandemic. And that was meant to come out at the end of this month.
I was going to say, what are the options then? What's it likely to look like?
I mean, there have been, and we've covered this quite a lot on our website, kind of looking at what the sort of different options are. But there have been a few that have been discussed. I mean, one of them was this idea of optionality. So the idea that you would have some choice or degree of choice in a question paper, so students would be able to kind of decide to answer on a topic that they had covered rather than one they hadn't. But there are all sorts of problems with that, and you know, we heard from the head of AQA that was looking a bit unlikely. And then in terms of other things that have been considered, use of special consideration, by region, because obviously some areas have been so much more affected by COVID than others. Thinking about, you know, possibly putting in like a mock exam series before, or kind of some benchmark tests for GCSEs before the summer series. Alternatively, doing sort of some papers after the summer series to mop up students who wouldn't have been able to sit those summer papers. And then also there's been talk around, you know, how you might adjust the grading to address the fact that students haven't been at school and haven't had as much time in the classroom. So I think, you know, that there are various issues with all of those measures, but the thing is that obviously schools and teachers do need to kind of know what's going on.
Absolutely,
like, I think it can't be like last year where it's sort of, you know, or this year rather, it's just 2020 feels so long, it feels like last year. In terms of, you know, it can't be like the summer where they sort of, you know, have a U-turn at the last minute and then sort of rule out another way of doing things. Like, if it's going to be teacher assessment, if it's going to be some other form, if whatever it's going to be, that they need to sort of state that clearly to schools now.
Come up with it and just accept that it's not going to be perfect. I guess that I think one of your someone was saying that when they Catherine about was it Colin Hughes was saying it just isn't, you know, we just need to accept we're not going to come up with a perfect replacement for normal life here. We're not in a normal situation. So, but we just need to know what the plan is.
What do you think, Catherine? Do you think it will be next week, or do you think we could potentially be waiting beyond then, like from what you've heard?
I wouldn't be shocked if I can't say honestly, I haven't heard anything to suggest it won't be next week. So as far as I know, it was meant to be by the end of this month. But I wouldn't be shocked if it is somehow delayed. But I think, you know, also it would you know, as Mary Louise was just saying, I think if they did announce something and sort of state very clearly, very honestly, this is not going to address everything that's gone on. I think that would, whatever it is, I think it would build a lot of goodwill in the you know, within the profession and with students as well, because, you know, the other thing in a story I did recently about how far behind some of the exam groups are, which was based on sort of some comments from members of ASCOL. Another thing that kind of came across really clearly was how stressed students are and how they you know, are feeling very uncertain. They feel like any kind of mock exam they do at the moment or any sort of test or catch up is sort of possibly going to be geared towards like a center assessed grade. They're very, very anxious. And I think that for both teachers, having been a teacher, I can imagine sort of trying to reassure students about that at this time. Mm. I think that, you know, if there was some form of certainty, even if it was perhaps, you know, an imperfect form of certainty and you know, mm-hmm. there's an acknowledgement that it won't solve everything, I think it would just make things better and it would build goodwill as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so students must feel they're in that pre-exam kind of stress phase the whole time right now.
That is what a horrible thought, you know, thinking like potentially whatever test I'm doing or the work that I'm doing in a classroom, you know, this could all potentially be used to inform a judgment for my final grade. I'd be beside myself with stress. That'd be so stressful. It's a horrible thought for them. Definitely.
It's the kind of unknown, I think. I think it's the unknown. I think that they don't quite know what form of exam they'll take. And so I think that is what really does need to be set out. And then once it is, then I think people will get on with it. But it just does need to be set out.
We'll be watching that. We'll be watching out for it on Monday then, won't we? Or possibly over this weekend. They could make an announcement, could they?
I couldn't tell you, potentially, but I'm not sure.
Well, look, Amy, can I ask you about the shenanigans yesterday involving the DfE guidance that was updated, and then it was put on the website for about half an hour, then it was taken down for the rest of the day and then put back up again, but formatted slightly different without the wording changed or something?
I think we're still trying to get to the bottom of exactly what happened there. Basically, everyone will know obviously that the new tiers were revealed for the whole country. So there's the national tiers, and everyone was frantically trying to find out how that affected their local area. And at the same time, we were trying to find out if it affected what was happening in schools, because obviously coming out of the national lockdown, things are likely to change. They were, you know, they did vary in schools beforehand, so they were likely to afterwards. Anyway, so the guidance was updated to sort of reflect what will happen after December the 2nd. And immediately two things jumped out at us. One of them was that clinically extremely vulnerable teachers were told that they could go back to work. So during the lockdown, they were told not to. And also the guidance on masks was ever so slightly relaxed. It's only, you know, in a minimal way, because it only affects those areas in tier one, which, as we know, is something like 1% of the population, not very many people at all. So in those areas, secondary schools that did have to make masks compulsory in communal areas will be able to kind of have the discretion to make that decision, as opposed to that being mandated by the government. So those were the two main things that we picked out. But as we were sort of working on these stories, the guidance just came down. And actually it started to redirect you just to the homepage, the DfE homepage, as opposed to the guidance page. I think we'd already published one of the stories at that point, so obviously we knew that to be true based on the information we had at the time. And we did chase the DfE to try and find out, you know, is there anything significant changing? Is there any reason this has gone down? Were there any errors that we should know about? Didn't hear anything. And actually it was John, I think, that was chasing throughout the day. I think I asked them once, and then John kind of continued trying to call. At one point, the phone lines just went down, so we couldn't even reach them, could we, John? I think we were just getting
So basically, yeah, from midday through till the end of the day, really, end of the workday, there was nothing there. And we also found that it wasn't just the updated guidance. There's a document on the DfE's website, the full opening for schools document, which is kind of like one of the main guides of information. That, when you clicked on that link, it disappeared as well. At the end of the day, sort of after into the evening, they said that they'd had technical problems with it, was self-evident, and the guidance re-emerged fundamentally as it had been. But I think it's, we spoke to, as we were desperately trying to find out what was happening, and we went to the DfE multiple times, spoke to Jeff Barton, the General Secretary of ASCOL, and he kind of said, this is par for the course. You know, this was a day where they were launching the new national restrictions. The whole country's coming to terms with the new reality. What does it mean for us? Not least of all schools and school leaders. And they're trying to find out what it means, and the guidance appears and vanishes. And obviously, as journalists, we see a document and build a story on it, and then it disappears. And you think, well, what does that mean? Does that mean that they've withdrawn this guidance, or is it a technical thing? And it's literally sort of 6 or 7 hours of school leaders and education journalists being in the dark. It's a technical problem, but I think given all the issues school leaders have had with the guidance, it arriving late in the day, it being endless, as Jeff Barton basically described it, has been par for the course for a hapless government. And that, I think that's probably how school leaders felt about it yesterday afternoon. Just a little bit on the masks. As Amy said, during the lockdown, all secondaries were wearing masks in communal areas. Now, if you're in tier one, you don't have to. At the moment, that only applies to like Cornwall and nowhere else on the mainland. But Boris Johnson said last night that our tiers are not our destiny, and that we can move between like 3, 2, and 1. Sorry to quote that.
What does it mean?
If tiers go from 2 to 1, then masks will become less prevalent in schools, basically. That's the kind of the big news on that. But that is dependent on COVID getting better, and when have we last been able to say that?
You know what? Yeah, I was really surprised. I don't know about you guys. I was really surprised by that announcement on the masks, because it does only affect very few schools, as John's pointed out. And that is important. It's not going to change in the majority. But like, I understand we're coming out of the national lockdown, but they're probably used to having masks now. So the idea that things will change and be relaxed, and maybe, you know, school leaders might think, oh, so are we not really supposed to be kind of, it's our discretion, how do we make that decision? And I think while the infection rate is still relatively high, I don't see any harm in kind of masks, that the rules of masks staying the same. But so I was quite interested to see, but perhaps as you say, John, because the tiers are somewhat fluid in the expectation is, you know, it's, areas will move from one to the other at some point. Maybe it's about kind of graduating it and easing kind of masks out of schools. I'm not sure, but I was slightly surprised by that, I must say.
Yeah, and it's difficult to know, isn't it? As you say, John, with, you know, press office going through to a Tesco mobile answer phone on a day when they're announcing major changes to the tiers. then it's kind of hard to pin these things down, but get there, we'll do our best.
Was it a technical problem then? Is that what the DFA said?
That was the information that came into the evening. But obviously you can half assume that, but when it's updated guidance, you know, you kind of put me back to, there was a thing where Ofqual put stuff about mock exams, and you know, things were published and then withdrawn in the past, and it's because it's been issues rather than
it did remind me of that, actually.
You know, as a journalist, you're wanting to get the story out there quickly and get the information clear. But I think for school leaders, it must be a nightmare, because they look to this stuff to kind of plan. And yeah, obviously, a website goes down, it's a technical problem, but I think it's just like the latest in a long line of stresses around DfE guidance for schools.
Well, on a lighter note, Mary Louise, we are today publishing a teacher's guide to student slang. Is that right?
I don't think it, I think we had a piece this week on that, and just a couple of new words. I don't know if any of you lot have heard of them, but apparently the top one at the moment is simp. Has anyone heard of that one? So
I've seen it on the internet, and I was like, what does that mean? And then I never looked it up. But
I'd heard it said in like TikTok videos, and I didn't know. I didn't actually know what it meant. I just heard people using it. So
it means if you're sort of acting kind of overly kind of nicey around someone that you've got a bit of a crush on, so you're a bit of a simp for somebody you've always liked, so you're kind of, you know, you're sucking up to them, I guess, in old school language. So is that one, and I think that was the one that stuck out for me. I mean, I having a bit of problems with the website, seeing the rest of those. But
something's a bit sus was the second one, wasn't it?
Was
that's
it?
That's not on you. That's not on you.
I thought that was quite established.
Yeah, that's a long-standing thing. And it's not just students who say that.
And Step was another one. I think there was just three on here.
I've never heard of that at all.
I was looking at the piece, but yeah.
Ah, so that's coming from, like Bro and all of that stuff, all of Blood. So if you're, if it's your girlfriend, that you know they're really close to you, but they're not quite your brother, so they're your step. I don't know.
Right. Wow. Hey,
My son says OP, as in that's over. That's OP. Have you heard that before?
Is that the original? I thought it was like. Oh no, maybe not.
Overpowered.
Yeah, short for overpowered.
Yeah, I hear that.
I don't know anything.
I hear that because I've got a Fortnite household. I'm ashamed to say. My eldest played it. He's too
OP. Is it from Fortnite?
He used it in Fortnite. Fortnite brings a whole, it's like a different language. I practically need a vocab guide to understand.
Hey, listen,
I'm sure
guys.
I
remember Bear. That was the only one, like Bear for very. That's Bear.
Yeah,
that's the last slang I've absorbed.
Well, you can combine it. Bear Peng. Do you remember Peng?
Yeah, I remember Peng. Yeah.
Like, those were the days.
I'm sure our readers will tell us loads of it, loads more, but yeah.
We'll have to carry this on afterwards, but we've got to wrap up for now because I'm just thinking about the time.
So it's not a fascinating discussion, Dan.
Yeah, fascinating. Listen, we'll see you all next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.
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 Bye.